Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. We got another Talking Hoops coming on here right away. And it should be a really good show tonight. I'm just kind of getting my groove together for what's going to be, to me, really, the more and more I'm kind of sinking my teeth into this whole thing, I think it's a season in which a lot of major activity is going to happen that's been kind of bubbling under the surface for quite some time as far as just changing the landscape of college basketball and the fabric of it. One thing that's changed here in Seattle is Seattle U having a new coach, and we've talked about him quite a bit, and he's been a consistent supporter of our show here, Jim Hayford. But we're not going to have Jim on today. We will have him on soon. We're going to be doing a lot of coverage of Seattle U. But we're going to be talking about Seattle U and having quite a bit of discussion there. We will also be talking about Washington Huskies, who are going into the Pac-12 Media Day here tomorrow. And that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting season for them. And I wish them a lot of luck. And although I'm still, completely and totally shell-shocked by what happened with Jen Cohen firing Romar, but I'm sure those guys don't, that's the farthest things from their mind. They're just focusing on trying to put together a winning season. And there's a lot of talent on that Husky team, no kidding, especially, wings and a couple of really good bigs. I think David Crisp is the big question. He'll be a junior. He had struggled quite a bit as a sophomore. But then again, so did Justin Dentman. So look how great Justin's turned out. And they're both about the same size. They both have somewhat similar games. I think that David Crisp's got a lot of potential and could become a great point guard. And I know that he's gotten a lot of heat. This last week we had a caller come in and say some really nasty things about him. And I just like to say also for any of you who are following us that I've just about had it with that kind of stuff. I don't have much tolerance for people that make those kind of comments. So I'm going to really be cutting that off. Anyway, we've got a guy that I really feel does a great job of covering Seattle U and just have a great time talking Hoops with him just about any time on just about any subject. And that would be Amar Abdul Nasir, and I just wanted to check and see what you're thinking is. We're getting really really close to the season here, Amar. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Great. And I just wanted to check in with you. I did. What kind of vibes are you getting on CLU right away so far?
I mean, it's a new era, new coach coming in, Jim Hayford, who people locally, probably know from Eastern Washington. Sounds like from, what he's saying and, just how the roster's shaping out, I mean, it's going to be like a new style of play. He's kind of doing some things that, the previous regime didn't really do, particularly like focusing a lot on transfers, getting a lot of grad transfers and then transfers from other D1 programs who are like maybe sitting out this season but are going to be available in the future. I think there are some returners, from last season's team that people are going to recognize, but I think that the team's at least going to play a lot differently results-wise. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're kind of picked to finish, middle of the pack to kind of lower half of the WAC. But, I mean, that, it's kind of hard to predict how they're going to do this because they have so many new players and they're going to be introducing kind of a different system and everything. I'd say, things are kind of looking up for them. Anytime you bring in a new coach who has kind of a track record of success, like there's some optimism around the program. So that's kind of what I'm gathering from over there is that, people are at least optimistic and hopefully going to be patient, with this new staff and see what they can do.
Seattle fans patient. Good luck. But know, you and I have both been around the Seattle area a long time. You know, it's a good basketball community. Right now, it's a little shell shocked, I think, to be honest with you, with the Sonics, you know, being punted, and then you know, of course, this thing with Lorenzo Romar. There was an awful lot of talk, I think, from a really vocal minority about how he was a complete failure, and you know, these basketball experts like you know, Colin Cowherd really calling him out on the national media, and just a lot of stuff like that. And I think as time goes on, I think a lot of people are going to be sharing my point of view that he that was a huge, huge blunder on the part of the UW AD to let him go, along with that class and just the connections and the community that supported him and everything else. So there's that. I think it's a great opportunity for Seattle U. I mean, I couldn't see a better scenario right now, other than the fact that I really do care about Cameron Dollar and Will Conroy and those guys that are struggling to Washington in the wake of this, you know, huge blunder. But I'm sure for them it's just a job, and they're going to do the best they can. I wouldn't be surprised to see them really rebuild it in a few years and get things going again. But you know, I think that with Seattle U, you got what Jim Hayford does is he just goes out and gets players. And well, I'll tell you, he's gotten these third year transfers. Now, just taking a look real quickly at the picture as it stands, really, they've got three guys that are grad transfers that are going to be playing this year. Rashad mm-hmm. Gittins, who had really good numbers in the Big Sky over there at Weber State. Jordan Hill, who played, I mean, for gosh sake, in the 8-man rotation in a Final Four team at Wisconsin. And he's mm-hmm. going to be a big, big addition. And of course, you've got Josh Herlihy. And I think he was from, I'm not sure where he's from. I think he's from California or something. I know he's a senior. And oh, I remember he's from back east. He played for
He's from California, but he played at Vermont, and then he played at Tulane. So this is his third D1 stop. But he's a California guy originally. Yeah.
But basically, he's a 6'8", 215-pound veteran. And in college basketball, you got to have some big guys. And I think he's going to be a functional guy to help, you know, make up for the loss of a couple of the guys they lost it last year as far as some of the bigs. And mm-hmm. and you got this guy, Miles Carter, who's, you know, a reasonably respectable prospect who's a walk-on this year, but in the class of 2015 was a, you know, reasonably moderately rated recruit. And then, of course, you got the huge big guy, Aaron Menzies, who, you know, can really be a big difference maker depending on matchups. And then Colin Hoon, who's a ball control point guard, a junior college transfer, so he's been around. He's more of a veteran, so he can give you some quality minutes and take care of the ball for you and hopefully not lose games for you. And then it just seems like it just gets better from there. You got Matej Kavis. Did I pronounce it correctly?
It's Matej Kavis. I just learned that.
There I go.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of Seattle U stuff to this year, so I'm going to have to get these pronunciations right. So, but I will be down there. And so he's the reigning, the returning freshman of the year in the WAC, and heck of a good, you know, I'd call him a wing, wouldn't you?
Yeah. He's like 6'8". You know, I'd say like on some teams could be like a power forward, but I'd say probably ideally like a small forward, maybe like a stretch four type of guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've got Spurgeon, who's a shooter. Who showed some good signs last year. You got Morgan Means, who started as a freshman at point guard. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to say that he's going to be a factor for sure. And then Matt Owies, who's I think he's got a sit, if I'm not mistaken. He's from Hawaii, another guard that I think is going to be be able to help you next season. And Deshaun McDowell from SMU, who's a highly rated recruit, like a 3-4 star guy for SMU. Larry Brown recruit that is sitting a year. He'll be definitely kicking in next year. And you got Nettles, who did, I mean, I think he's a really solid prospect from Seattle Prep. And then this Brendan Corrigan, I'm not so sure about him. He's a walk-on, but so there you go. And then there's also Mattia DeCampo and Latio Cosmos. Can you help me with those at all?
Those ones I'm not sure about. I think Cosmos is the last name. I'm not sure I pronounced the first name. And then it is Mattia DeCampo.
Okay.
And he's from,
and they're from both
he's
from
Italy.
Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both
and
from
also,
Italy. I know that.
Scott Uliano, he's another guy from Italy. He was a freshman last season coming back for his sophomore year.
Oh, really? So
yeah,
maybe
like
maybe
six,
one
six
of these
ten,
other
like,
guys, maybe this Cosmos guy, is he from Italy too?
No, he's actually he's from here. He's from Redmond. He went to
okay. I guess that's all wrong. Thank you for straightening me out. Yeah, I'm just getting acquainted with this roster. But what I will say is, you know, you've got with these fifth year transfers, grad transfers, you all of a sudden look like a veteran team. You know, you've got Menzies,
right,
who's a fourth year senior who redshirted 1 year. And you got some guys that can. You got some guys that kind of look like veterans, and it's a veteran team. And that WAC conference is wide open. How would you rate the WAC this year? Do you think this is a middle of the road team? Do you think that they have a chance to maybe move up a little bit? I do.
I think they can. I think they can do better than fifth, which is what they're predicted to do. I mean, the kind of interesting thing about this team is, it's a lot of newcomers, but they're not young. You know, there's only one freshman on the roster, and that's Nettles. You know, all these guys that they brought in that are, you know, transfers and stuff, I mean, they're either, you know, grad students, or they're, you know, juniors, or, you know, redshirt sophomores or something like that. So it's like they have a lot of experience, but they just haven't played together. So it's, you know, like they've all played at a high level, they just haven't done it as a team. So it's like you kind of, you know, they have that experience, but they need to like build a chemistry together. So depending on how that goes, and that's, you know, really tough to predict, you know, just looking at the names. I mean, even if you go to like a couple practices, you know, it's kind of tough to tell. You know, kind of remains to be seen, you know, when they start playing games. But yeah, I mean, if they click well together, you know, with the talent they have, and you know, they got size, and you know, they have shooters, and you know, they have what Jim Avery's saying that he wants to do. They have the players who can do that, and so I think if they mesh well, if they click, if you know, they figure out the right lineups and the right rotation and everything, and then yeah, I think they could be, you know, top three in the conference. Grand Canyon, they were picked to win the conference by both the coaches and the media. They are tournament eligible this year for the first time. And then New Mexico State, they've kind of been, you know, the team, I won't say dominating the WAC, but they've been regularly winning
pretty
it,
close
know, over the last
yeah.
2 years. Yeah. You know, they're up there. And then you got Cal Bakersfield. They got the tournament bid a couple years ago. They're also like in the mix. So those are kind of the top three. And I think SU could crack that. I mean, you know, maybe, maybe one of those teams like takes a little step back, or, you know, maybe Grand Canyon isn't as good as some predict.
It's,
you know, really, really possible.
Well, I think the league is starting to kind of come together a little bit too. I think it's getting better. I mean, the big news for the league, as far as I can tell, is the kid from Oregon, the starting point guard, or guy that played a lot of starting point guard minutes for them over the past few years, grad transfer going there to Grand Canyon to play for his brother, I believe, is one of the assistant coaches or something like that. But and so that's a big deal, because I mean, he was a solid, you know, I would call him an unsung star in the Pac-12, one of those guys that does all the little things to help you win. And he just was a real positive for that Duck program, which has basically been the best program in the Pac-12. I'm not going to mince words. They just are, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
but so that's going to be they're gonna, that's going to be an interesting team to watch because they've got obviously a really solid floor general with a guy with that kind of experience to play at that kind of level. I mean, they're in the Final Four last year, Amar. I mean, you know, it's no joke, you know. And he was there, right there with them. And but getting back to Seattle U and what's cooking, really, I mean, you got to say that this Jim Hayford is really doing some things with recruiting. I think he's really doing some things right. They just got a commit from a guy who's the number 13 combo guard in the country. He's only a 3-star. I don't know how that works, but he's probably a marginal 4-star. Then they got another guy that is a big 6'7" shooter from Santa Monica who's committed, Rip Ekwonomou, and he's known as a guy that can really light it up, and it's got a really tall kid. And then they also have, according to 247 Sports, another guy who's a big, another big guard, 6'4", reasonably sized guard, about the same size as Hopkins, a little taller, Kyle Greeley from West Salem, Oregon, so a little more of a local guy. So they got 3 commits already for 2018, so they're picking up some freshmen too, and obviously shown that they can pick up grad transfers, which that's a big, big plus these days. So they really, I mean, Hayford's just done a great job there with being able to get guys that can help them win right away. So they're in pretty good shape. Go ahead.
I was going to say the kid, Trayvon Hopkins, he's the combo guard that you were talking about. He's from Oklahoma City. He was previously committed to Boise State over the summer and decommitted. And, you know, eventually landed on Seattle U. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, you can kind of gauge, you know, perhaps what kind of player you're getting by the programs that were looking at him in addition to your program. And, you know, from what I've seen about Hopkins, I mean, he was getting looks from, Nebraska and Tulsa. You know, they said, you know, UCLA was there. I mean, I don't know how hard UCLA was after him, but, legit programs, you know, we're looking at him. So, I mean, he's obviously a talent.
I hate to say it, but I think that he's a really good talent. And he's the kind of player that the coach Mike Hopkins is getting in 2018, really about the same type of level player as far as recruiting, you know, experts and such as that. So, you know, I don't know what that says. I think that Hopkins is kind of struggling right now to kind of get guys, but you know, you never can tell until these guys have played for a while if maybe he knows what he's doing, and he's got guys that are going to be incredibly good, because recruiting is just kind of so hard to figure, you know, sometimes really to really know for sure. But as far as the actual level of stars and, you know, accolades and notices, Trayvon Hopkins is right in about the same level as the kind of guys that Washington has so far gotten to commit for 2018. So, and then this Ekwonomou has the same number of stars. He's slightly lower rated than just a notch lower rated below Hopkins, and he's a big tall kid that can shoot, which is always good to have. So this is going to be an interesting thing to watch, and I'm really excited about this Seattle U program. It's just going to be a whole new thing for me. I'm going to be doing a lot of coverage for them this year and going down there and really getting involved with covering them. And I'll probably be doing more high school coverage this year too, and I hope you can help me with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to probably be heavily involved with watching Garfield and what they're doing, and then in the process get a chance to see a lot of other great teams, you know. So, so other than that, I mean, anything new? Have you had a chance to go see these guys practice yet? I haven't. I'd like to.
No, I haven't had a chance to see them practice. I know they haven't announced – if they're having like an open to the public practice. I know the last few years under Coach Dollar, about like late October or so, they would kind of have like a, you know, open to the public scrimmage, last week of October or so. They haven't had any announcement so far on that this year. I was. They had a media day. The WAC media day was this week in Denver. It might have actually been today. So I, you know, was kind of paying attention to that, and you know, watched you know, Coach Hayford's interview. And a couple of things I picked up from that is, you know, he was asked, you know, kind of what style of player are you going to do? You know, what you, you know, what's going to be different? And he stressed a couple of times that, you know, while you do want to, you know, take advantage of the players that you have, you know, who are established, you know, when you take a new job, he said he does want to, he wants to shoot a lot of threes. He wants to attack the rim, and he wants to have a dominant post player. And he talked about having a dominant post player surrounded by shooters. And, you know, that's his preferred style. And in that, he talked about Aaron Menzies was kind of the guy he talked about the most. You know, of course, the big, you know, 7'3 center. He talked about Matei Kavis and Morgan Means. And he referred to those three as the core of the team.
Wow.
He kind of got into talking about the three grad transfers that you mentioned, Hill, Gittens, and Herlihy. And he said that it was a high priority for him to bring in veterans who had some leadership, who had been on winning programs. And so I'm kind of assuming, you know, that means not just this year, but going forward, that they're going to be a program who really looks at grad transfers and bringing in guys from other programs, maybe more so than, you know, bringing in freshmen, you know. He talked about, you know, Menzies missed, I mean, more than half the season with that foot injury. Said that Menzies is all good to go. He's, you know, been seeing foot specialists, and he got cleared, over the spring. He's lost some weight. I know they have him listed at like 285, and they are doing some things with him as far as, like, you know, his workouts and stuff that, like, where they're focusing on not putting so much strain and pressure on his foot. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, you got a guy that's, you know, around 300 pounds and putting all that weight on his foot. I mean, you know, you don't want a Yao Ming type situation where it's just always stress fractures and ankle injuries and things like that. So it sounds like they are being really mindful to, like, protect, you know, his foot and, you know, get him on the court for games, and, you know, so he doesn't, you know, get hurt. So it seems like, you know, they're kind of relying on him a lot to be a big force for them. And he talked of Coach Hayford, he talked about, you know, he praised Cameron Dollar and his staff for putting some good defensive teams on the floor, but at the same time said, you know, things are going to be a little different now. And, you know, again, kind of reiterated that, you know, they're going to be playing faster, they're going to be shooting more threes, they're going to be attacking more. What I gathered just from, you know, who he talked about and, you know, the kind of style he wants to play, I'd say that if I were going to project a lineup right now, I think he would have Mike Morgan Means playing point guard, Gittens and Rashad Gittens and Jordan Hill kind of playing wings. Kavis kind of playing like a stretch four, and then Menzies in the middle. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be like a, you know, like a four out, one in type of system.
No, it doesn't sound like a four out, but it's kind of like, it's like you got a point guard that's going to be kind of running it, and probably Menzies doing a lot of, you know, picks, and that sounds like Kavis can also, I'll work on it, is big enough to be able to set some picks and help some of those guys, and, you know, maybe some pick and pop, that kind of action, and then obviously trying to get the ball inside to the big guy, you know?
Right.
It's really interesting because the big guy's he's a pretty interesting player. I've seen him really put on a pretty good show here and there. You know, last year going up against you know, a bunch of teams, he had some good moments. But he's a veteran now. He's obviously put in another year, and with bigs, it just takes time. And all of a sudden, it seems like it just clicks. So that could be what happens here. But you know, it's just interesting. But as another note. Just while, you know, while we were talking about this, I looked and found, as I was looking at something online, that according to 24/7 Sports, right now, currently, with their rating system, Seattle U has the number one rated recruiting class for 2018 in the WAC. So,
okay.
You know, it may not seem like a big deal, but it may change overnight with the commitment of one player or something like that. But they're on top of the league. So, I mean, it seems mm-hmm. like Hayford's just he's kind of doing everything right. And, you know, I think with Cameron Dollar, I think he would have been a really good addition to Lorenzo Romar's staff. I think he's going to do a great job with helping this current UW team get back on into a defensive mindset again, as he would have probably for UW. But I think everything's going to go well with him. But I think that just Hayford's really put together a kind of a good program over there at Eastern. He's got a head of steam and really seems to know his way around. And he's obviously got all the connections locally and has worked hard to get a lot of great international talent and sort of knows the overall picture of what's out there. And I think he's doing a great job so far. Have you talked to Jim at all?
No, I've not talked to him yet.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he'd love to talk to you. He's a very, very nice cat. So, but so there's pretty much that. I mean, I think Seattle is going to be great. We're going to be definitely looking into it. I'm kind of starting new with them. You know, I'm one of the few people that are covering that actually saw them when they were really in their heyday. I saw them play with a bunch of great players in the early 70s and throughout the 70s and stuff. And I don't go as far back as some of the, you know, the 60s guys, but, you know, I saw the heyday when they would fill Seattle Center Coliseum, as it was called then. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch them this year. I really think it's going to be an uptick year for them. And I think Seattle needs a winner. It'd be good to see Seattle get an NBA team again. Any thoughts on the NBA so far this year, just with the preseason stuff? Any just interesting thoughts of anything that's appealed to you?
I mean, I feel like I'm still trying to catch up on just all the movement and who went where.
Right.
And you know, it's like, you know, in a normal year, you know, I'm pretty good even going into the preseason. Like, you know, I know exactly who's where and everything. But, I mean, this year it's like – I'm still, you know, I'll see a roster and I'm like, oh, you know, I forgot. Oh my God, I forgot they got that guy. You know, and it might have even been kind of a significant move, but there was just so much activity that happened just in those couple of weeks before training camp opened that it's like a whole new league. It reminded me of that summer of 2010 when,
right.
You know, when Mike LeBron was first a free agent and, you know, it was like Wade and LeBron and Stoudemire, and it was like, It seemed like half the league was free agents, you know, and there was a lot of movement. And this year it was more so, you know, these big trades that were happening.
Right.
And yeah, so it's like the whole, you know, it's like the whole landscape changed, you know. And even with that, it still looks like Cleveland and Golden State are still, you know, at the top of the heap. So,
Cleveland sure made some moves. So I got to say that, from the standpoint of just sort of I wasn't a big Cleveland fan because I can't stand, some of LeBron's antics. But, you know, I like Isaiah Thomas so much that I've sort of grown to like LeBron too as a person, not necessarily his whole legacy, but as a person, I'm really starting to dig him. I'm really going for Cleveland this year. I really think they got a shot. As great as Golden State, as incredible as Golden State is, I really think that they're tooled to be able to beat them. I mean, it's going to be very competitive, much more so than it was this last year. I don't know about the Western Conference. I mean, I know the Oklahoma State's made some huge moves. You know, you can't count out what Houston has done, getting Chris Paul to go with James Harden. And then, of course, there's obviously San Antonio. You're never going to count them out the way they do things. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be pretty competitive. But I just sort of see Golden State handling all three of those teams as good as they are. And then there's a huge drop-off after that. It's pretty mediocre after that. What about the Eastern Conference? I mean, you got Celtics looking really good, actually, with the way things are there. And I know that Isaiah Thomas is not going to play probably till December or January. So it's, and then LeBron's out right now. So, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see how all this comes together. And obviously anything can change with injuries. And there's always some player that comes out of nowhere and just really kills it. The guy that blows my mind, I saw a lot in the summer and also he's done well in the fall, is Kyle Kuzma from Utah. That's just really shown real well down to the Lakers. Have you seen him yet?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of kind of funny because, yeah, I know a lot of Lakers fans, and you know, I guess, you know, because of how the last few years have gone. Yeah, I get that they are just kind of looking for anything positive to kind of latch onto. But it's like the way they talk about Kuzma, it's like, you know, he's already the best player on the team, and I mean, some guys it's like they forgot about all the Lonzo Ball hype, and they're just totally on the Kyle Kuzma train, which is you know, kind of funny. And I was saying in college, I'm like, I know he's going to be a good pro. Like, I can tell he's going to be good, and he's going to be under the radar. But the fact that he landed on the Lakers and he's been so good the preseason, now it's like he's almost going to be like overrated by the time the season starts. At least, you know, by some of the Lakers fans, which, you know, I don't know, I guess, you know, being an old Sonics fan, I kind of always have a little, you know, thing against the Lakers. So,
yeah. Same here. Well, I know you got to get going here. I really appreciate coming on and stuff like that. And, I mean, he's a rookie, you know, that he has looked like he can, you know, he can give Brandon Ingram sort of a run for his money at the same spot, really, you know, and they do have Lonzo. And I'm a huge Lonzo fan. I think Lonzo is going to make a big difference. So I think they're going to be improved.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, make some sort of a tepid run at a playoff spot. But it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
They're still real young. And, you know, but it's great having you on the show again, Amar. And hopefully we'll be seeing each other down the road quite a bit this year as I try to really kind of focus more on Seattle U. And I'm going to be going down there quite a bit. And hopefully we'll get a chance to hang out and do some talking down at the Key Arena.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right, well, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, this is Amar Abdul Nasir, is that correct? Thank you. All right, got it. All right, we'll see you next time, and thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks.
You bet. Well, you know, we got a lot to look forward to with the Seattle U, and, you know, it's going to be fun to watch what's going on over there. You know, the UW is going to be also interesting. Obviously I'm always going to be interested in what they're doing and paying attention to what they're doing and caring about what they're doing. I'm, you know, obviously completely and totally upset about what happened with the Romar thing. It's just so stupid. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like everybody that he had coming in that class is doing extremely well. It would have made the team that they have down there about, you know, twice as talented, if not more so than last year, because they lose a guy like Markel Fultz, who's a great guard, number one pick, but they bring in two guys that are probably top five picks and one guy who's number one pick, probably the best player to play, in my opinion. I know that this isn't a consensus opinion, but, you know, with Michael Porter Jr., probably the best player to come into the game since probably Kevin Durant and maybe even since Carmelo and the era of Carmelo and LeBron. So the key thing is it's devastating to me that they would walk away from that, and just the fact that they, you know, were so just so lacking in really understanding of the game of basketball and the kind of person that Lorenzo was juxtaposed against the kind of people that are out there that he's competing against and what they do and what he does. And, you know, and now I think with this FBI investigation, that's going to be pretty well bared out, I guess, borne out. And I think that with him down at Arizona, I mean, My opinion is that Arizona is just the beginning of a huge, huge storm that's going to take Arizona away from where they're at. And I think they're just extremely blessed to have Lorenzo Romar there, because I think they can, if they're smart, they'll cut bait on Sean Miller, get rid of him, get him out the door, because he was a Cowboy. He was, I mean, I don't just say this because I'm just making stuff up in my head, people, okay? What I do actually, truthfully, is I know what's going on. I talk to people. I get to know people. I understand people. You know, I've been around the block, okay? And I I get a feel for what's going on, what people are, who I can just get a feel for who they are. And I've been able to uncover a lot of facts and a lot of stuff. And Arizona's one of the teams out there that's running a pretty tight little fast and loose deal. And they got big time booster that does a lot of shady stuff. And Sean Miller is a guy that is willing to play it fast and loose, in my opinion. They got assistant coaches, as we're finding out, that are crooked and willing to play that game. And they also have plenty of money to fill in any other gaps they may need as far as, you know, good quality X's and O's guys, trainers, all the greatest facilities, all the other stuff. So that's why they're such a big, big deal, okay? Kids, that's what it is. It's not like they just, because they're just, they drink good water or something. It's pay to play, and they have a lot of money. They have a lot of booster support, and they got guys that are willing to go dirty and under the table, just like Kentucky does, just like a UCLA does, just like USC does, just like Oregon, which is the most ridiculous situation in the history of college sports, just complete, conflict of interest with Nike practically owning college sports. And then the guy, you know, tries stepping up to him. You think Harvey Weinstein is hard to nail? Try Phil Knight. But at any rate, you know, the thing is, I think, you know, there's so many more. It's across the country. There's a lot of shady stuff going on. But we finally, and I say we, I may be the only one who really cares, but finally the FBI has decided to take on this criminality, because it's been criminal. It's been criminal for a long time. There's been money laundering. There's been wire fraud. There's been bribery. There's obviously been shady activities that involve shady people, including point shaving, prostitution, a variety of other things that stem from this underground economy, as Jay Billis calls it. And there's complicity on the part of the media. There's complicity and looking the other way, you know, knowing, you know, what to say and what not to say, almost to the point of a organized criminal involvement on the part of the media. I mean, a lot of the media people, you know, go to these AAU events with coaches and sit there and help them, you know, do stuff and make introductions through media ops, you know, call them to do review interviews and then get, you know, use the association to introduce them to people that are going to, you know, push them towards a school. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's been going on for years, and it's gotten a lot worse in the age of huge TV revenue, but it's always been going on, and not everybody does it. Okay. Not everybody does it. That's the thing that's irritating, but more and more have done it, as the NCAA has just shown themselves to be toothless. I mean, completely, you know, when they back down to Phil Knight on that Willie Lyles deal, they had him red-handed. If that was Rice, or if that was, you know, Kansas State, they would have nailed him to the cross, but they just backed away and just let that whole thing go. And to me, that was a sign to everybody out there that NCAA is not really about enforcing any sort of rules when it comes to pay to play. They're about damage control and avoiding their brands that make them the most money from being damaged. And that's kind of what that's about. They're a business. They're a business, and it's not really like the FBI. But guess what? It's gotten so out of hand because these guys know that the NCAA has to do something if they get busted. So they do things that are kind of under the radar that the NCAA can't find out about easily and discover. But guess what? The FBI can. And so we're going to start finding out an awful lot more. It's going to take time. It's not like the NCAA where it's just going to be a little, you know, couple of articles in ESPN and Body Blue on Yahoo or something. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some major corrections that happen in the case of college basketball. And finally, I'm so pleased. You know, I just feel that there's a lot of corruption that's gone on, and there's a lot of people that are involved from the standpoint of financial transactions. And, you know, there's just guys that have been in that business and been the guy you talk to when you want to figure out a way to hide money so you can give it to a recruit's parents or an AAU guy or whatever. There's just been a whole process. It's just been too sophisticated for the NCAA to get involved in, or even if it's found out, there's ways of plausible deniability that would spoof the NCAA and any kind of media coverage that happens. Well, guess what? The FBI is a different story. They're not like that. And they have a lot. They have ways. They have subpoena power. They can tap your phone. They can take your email account and look through it, and your phone, and all your contacts, and then they can dig, and they've already got indictments out there. So I think there's gonna be more. And I'm happy about it. I'm extremely happy. Nothing would make me happier than to see Arizona, UCLA, Oregon, and USC, the four dirtiest teams in the Pac-12, and incidentally, the four that are favored to do the best this year and did the best last year, and really did well. Oregon was in the Final Four, of course. UCLA in the Sweet 16, Arizona in the Sweet 16. I don't know if anybody got in the Elite Eight other than Oregon. I think that was it. But and then USC also won two games. They all won two games except for Oregon. Won, got all the way to the Final Four. So it was there were the elite teams did very well. But you know, we're finding out, and I think we will find out with Oregon. To be honest with you, I really do. I know that Phil Knight probably thinks he's above everything, but he's not. He's not above. He's not above the Department of Justice. And I think he probably feels like his political connections can buy his way out of this. And he may be. He's one of the richest people in the world. But I don't think it's a given like it is with the NCAA. So I think this is a whole new test for that huge conflict of interest that exists there with Nike and Oregon. I think it's going to be interesting because Arizona and USC right now are the favorites in the Pac-12. That's what they're going to be talking about tomorrow at the Pac-12, media day. You got two assistant coaches that have been indicted. So I guess they can just sit there and the NCAA can just look the other way while these guys run away with the Pac-12 and get into the Final Four and have big March Madness showings and all this other, or they can be proactive and start really handing out penalties. Why wouldn't they handle penalties for two guys that have been popped, 100% by the feds? It ain't like they got popped by the NCAA. They got popped by the feds, and I think there's more to come. I really do. But I think it really pretty much is those four teams. I think the Pac-12 fans can kind of rest assured. I don't think it's going to spread to anybody else. I think Arizona State has been known, to be honest with you, off and on in circles that I run to, have some kind of shady stuff going on. I don't think that's going on so much right now. It may. To some degree, that would be the one team I think that you might find that maybe something might happen, but I doubt it. My gut feeling is it's going to be limited to those four schools. So, and I think Colorado's pretty clean. I think Cal's pretty clean. I don't know, if they've always been clean, but I think they're really pretty solid. Now, then the other story that's kind of interesting is that the NCAA came up with this college commission to try to clean up college basketball, and Condoleezza Rice is going to be on it. I mean, how can they afford her? My goodness. The former Secretary of State, big time, Condoleezza Rice. So, I think she's going to be there, and that's pretty pretty big number, but she's been in academics for a while. She's been at Stanford. She means business, but you know, anybody that could dance with Dick Cheney and all those guys, I don't know if I trust him, to be honest with you. Condi, you know, Condi, you kind of played yourself, hon. I mean, you really did with Dick and his Halliburton crew there. So I don't know about her, but I do know that Mike Montgomery is a solid guy, and he's going to be on this thing. So I think I heard that the reason he left coaching was because he was so disgusted with the way things have gotten in this recruiting stuff. And I think some of the other peripheral things that go on with transfers and poaching and all that other kind of stuff that happens as a result of all this aggressive, crews of people out there trying to assemble talent for their teams that are paying. But, I think that Mike Montgomery is a guy that I would really trust and since he's not coaching right now, and I think he could do a very good job of providing some levity to this commission. At least hopefully they'll listen to him, because I think he knows more about this than just about anybody. John Thompson Sr. is also going to be on there, or I don't know if he's a senior, but the coach of Georgetown that was the coach back in the Patrick Ewing days and the great John Thompson era. Not his son, who recently was let go of there at Georgetown, who also was a good coach too, but he'll be there too. And I don't know much about him, but I have a feeling he knows what's up. And if he's there to clean basketball up, then great. I found it really comical that Jeff Eisenberg of Yahoo suggested that Sonny Vaccaro be, and people like that, that really understand. It's the Donald Trump. We need somebody who's really been in the swamp to clean up the swamp. Only I can clean up the swamp, because I'm basically a gangster and, you know, a Klan guy. Come on. Yeah, so Sonny Vaccaro is the guy that you need on that commission to help clean things up right. Sonny Vaccaro has been the biggest, by far the biggest, proponent and motivating force behind pay to play. He more or less invented it. He didn't invent pay to play, but he more or less invented this AAU platform that is the perfect, you know, marketplace for it. And it's from what I can, from based on my sources and based on my reporting, he's been involved in shady stuff all along under the radar. For all I can tell, he still is. So he'd be absolutely the wrong person. If he were picked that commission, I would seriously go ballistic. So looks like that wasn't taken as good advice by Jeff Eisenberg. I can't believe he suggested Sonny Vaccaro. I like Jeff Eisenberg. He's a really sharp guy that works really hard to come up with stories day in, day out in college basketball. But that's just I don't know how he came up with that. But, like I said, Sonny Vaccaro is sort of right in there with Phil Knight, Ricky Pitino. He's great friends with Rick Pitino, by the way, Sonny. Dick Vitale is another one that's just a big, unbelievable kind of buffoon. But he knows what's up, too, by the way. He's friends with Sonny. He's friends with Pitino. He's friends with Calipari. All those guys know each other. They're just, they're out there to make a buck. They're out there to take advantage of kids, basically. And they don't care about nobody. They act like they do, but yeah, I know what they care about. So my take on it is that what they really should do, if I was going to just kind of if I was going to be on this board, which I'd love to be honest with you, I loved it because they're making big money doing that. You can guarantee it. They ain't holding those meetings. And like I said, John Rothstein came out there and said, I'll be, once I know where the board meetings are being held, I'll be able to tell if this NCAA basketball corruption commission is going to be effective or not. If they're holding the meetings at Pebble Beach, or if they're holding them at Fort Wayne State, then I'll know the difference. I thought that was a great post he did today on Twitter. But I think that's kind of what it is. I think that it'll be a paying gig for these guys. And the NCAA needs to – what they need to do is they need to stop paying guys like Mark Emmert and every other one of his guys that are walking around, you know, in fancy suits. I mean, Emmert's obviously a very talented guy. He needs to get paid something competitive because he's running an operation that's huge. But there's a lot of people that are really lining their pockets in NCAA. What needs to happen, to be honest, is that kids that are playing basketball to be specific, and football, are really paying for these athletic programs. And I think they deserve to get more than they do from the school. I think if they want to make big money, I think they should be able to go to the pros and make big money, you know? But if they play college basketball and stick with it and use it as a springboard to learn their craft to be able to, you know, follow up and play pro later or whatever if they can or whatever, just on the way up or whatever, or even if they just dedicate themselves for 4 or 5 years to a basketball program or a football program and give it that much heart and soul to be able to compete at that level, you know, with guys who are future pros or just guys who are really talented at that level, I think they should get more academic benefits. That's been my thing for years now. I feel that the idea of paying them is wrong. But I do think that these colleges should kick down for much more academic benefits for them. I'm talking like seriously, like you sign a letter of intent. I've kind of monkeyed with this. I think this is the best theorem I've come up with so far. You sign a letter of intent to play football or men's basketball. Just sign it. They give you a letter of intent to sign and you sign it. You should be able to get, even if you don't want to play basketball anymore, you just want to decide, I want to quit. I don't want to play basketball. I don't want to play football. I just want to go to school. You should be able to go to school for 2 years. That's their tough luck. And these guys are all guys that have been working for many, many years to be able to get those opportunities to play at this level. You know, I think that they should be able to get something for all that work that got them to the point where they got offered a scholarship at Notre Dame or whatever. It's not the easiest thing to do. So you get them a sign a letter of intent, you get 2 years college paid for, books, room and board, and that's the tough luck of the school. And that's if they pick the wrong guy that doesn't want to play. If you play a full year of college football or basketball and men's basketball, then I think you should get 4 years. 4 years paid for after completing a full year. You're locked in to get 4 years. So you can decide, hey, I played a year of this thing. You know, these guys don't let me go to school. I don't want to waste 8 years of my life to get my four-year degree because they're not going to be able to spend the time I need to play, to be able to get in the weight room, be able to do all the workouts, do everything I need to do to be able to compete with these guys. I mean, you try to compete. You try to compete with guys. Well, you try to go on the court with Kyle Kuzma or, you know, Tony Roden or, you know, Casey Jacobson or any of these guys. You gotta put a lot of time and energy into that. So they may decide after 1 year, you know, I just want to go to school and get my four-year degree. You should be able to get 4 years paid for. Boom. You put in a year. Those people were in the stands. They paid all those high tie prices. They got all that TV revenue and all, sold all those jerseys and slacks and books and cups and parking and $5 cups of coffee and everything else. That money shouldn't be going into some administrator's pocket. There shouldn't be some guy driving a brand new car. It should be that kid getting 4 years of education. Okay, he did 1 year, 4 years of education paid for. He gets through 2 years, two full years at a men's basketball or a football program, D1, 2 years. He should get 6 years so that he can spend the time he needs to get to be competitive for 2 years, focusing on that, just barely staying eligible, doing the bare minimum that you need to do to stay eligible because it's so hard with all the time you need to put into the sport. And then you got 4 years to really get a degree that's actually going to get you somewhere in life. These degrees that these guys get after 4 years of this, just barely doing the bare basics they have to stay eligible, and they get these degrees that are just worthless. You know, get yourself a degree in, you know, something that you can market. And these, some of these schools are fantastic, but they're not able to take advantage of it. So you finish 2 years, you get 6 years paid for to really get a real degree. Okay. 3 years, 8 years, 4 years, four full years. You finish your 4 full years of eligibility, 10 years. And let's just say that you could do your 4 full years of eligibility and you got your communications degree or something like that. You don't want to use that other 6 years. You should be able to pass that on to your sister, your brother, your wife, your parent. I mean, somebody in your family or a spouse, you should be able to pass that over to them. Say, look, I don't want to go to school for 6 years and for six more years and become a lawyer or a physician or something like that that's really marketable. You know, or get my MBA and my law degree or something like that. I want to just, you know, I want to go out and play sports and, you know, do my thing professionally in the sports world or whatever. And I'm not really into college. Well, then that's cool. You can take that benefit that you're a tangible benefit and give that to your sister or your brother or your mom or your dad, and they can use that, or your wife. And then those people can benefit, something tangible that your family can benefit from. Not like, you know, a fancy car that's worth a bunch of, it's basically worth nothing, except for like, you know, just to show off and, you know, pick up girls in or something. Or just some bunch of cash you're going to blow and, you know, spend all on your friends and all this other ridiculous stuff. You know, something of tangible value that a university can provide to them cheaper than they could if they paid you. Like everyone's saying, we need to pay athletes. No, that's the wrong approach. I think they should really do it this way. Yeah, give a kid 6 years of full ride education at a really top world quality university like the University of Washington. And that would be something. That would be something real, something of value. And if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You just go play professional football and basketball. Don't play games. Just go do it. If you don't think that you want to go to school at all, just go straight out of high school. That's the way I look at it. So that's the kind of changes I'd like to see happen. And I think the NBA is going to stand in front of that. I think the NFL likes the system they have. So I don't think going straight from high school is going to happen in either of those leagues. So, but being what things are, you know, I think that might be the best way to really rationalize this, this college basketball commission. This is the kind of thing they should do. But what they really need to do is they really need to really be honest about the problems that exist in college basketball. And they start with the shoe companies and the agents and the boosters. And I think they need to be real about the fact that they've just taken the money to go along with the program, because the boosters have been coughing up big money. The agents very often are providing them with different types of spiffs, as we know from the FBI investigation. And the the shoe companies obviously have been, I mean, when you're you know, a team that's has a budget of X that they get from selling tickets and whatever, and they got to do all these other sports and, you know, women's volleyball, everything else. So those sports at Washington do pretty well, but a lot of places they don't, you know. It's hard to make it, but then, you know, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour come along and they give you $1 million. And it just, you know, that's the way that all that gets done. But then the real truth is, as we've seen with Ricky Pitino and others, is that a lot of that goes into the pocket of people in the program that sort of use it for, you know, for themselves and for to run, you know, their show. So, you know, but we're gonna talk about this. We're gonna probably be the best source for this kind of information overall, because I'm not gonna pull any punches. I'm gonna lay it out, and I've done not just. I'm just reading the paper and just listening to these stupid namby-pamby editorials from guys like Jeff Eisenberg, who think that Sonny Vaccaro should be on the NCAA Corruption Commission. I've been pounding the streets, the alleys, the backwoods, the internet, the, you know, the bars. I pretty much know what's going on out there from a standpoint of a lot of sort of the underbelly of things. And, it's been a beat that I've been on for 12 years, and you know, I could write a book, and I may, kind of involved in another book right now about a music thing. But I mean, this is something that needs to be done thoroughly, and we need to see people like Rick Pitino, like World Wide West, like Andy Miller, like Jim Ratto at Adidas. We need to see people like this, like Phil Knight, like John Calipari, like Ben Howland. We need to see people like this running scared, and in many cases, serving time. And I'm not joking. This idea that all these big head coaches don't know anything, and these assistants who are 99.9% African American are all going to pay the penalty for this system that's so corrupt. That can't possibly happen. I'll do everything I can to make sure that doesn't happen. We need to see guys go down. Guys like Rick Pitino, guys like Ben Howland, guys like Bill Self, obviously John Calipari, and many, many more. I'm not saying that all the head coaches are white and all the assistants that are doing bad things are black, but it needs to change. It completely needs to change. And the guys that are doing bad stuff need to be good and scared, and many of whom found guilty and paying a price so that people in the future are kind of much – have to approach it from a much different angle. And I think it may hurt the overall picture of NCAA sports, but so be it. There's plenty of fans, there's plenty of money, and there'll still be plenty of money. So if the money's going into the pockets of people that are getting an education for themselves and their family, as opposed to mostly in the pockets of people who are just putting it in their pocket for marketing it or whatever, or, you know, marketing these kids to agents and shoes and all this other stuff, then, you know, those opportunities will still be there. These guys will have to be really, really careful not to cheat. That's part of playing sports, is you don't cheat. Yeah, when you have traveling or something like that, you turn the ball over. You don't say, "Oh, I didn't travel." You know, you accept the fact that you play the ball game by the rules. And that's what needs to happen overall in college sports. Anyway, I'm gone over, and I appreciate you listening. If you're out there, and we'll see you next week. This is Jim Bassnight for Talking Hoops, and God bless you. Take care. Mm-hmm.